You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Batten down the hatches, we're all gonna die.
This is a special hurricane edition.
Armageddon.
Of the Photobomb podcast. I feel weird because we're recording this before the Monday when it comes out.
Right.
The hurricane should hit us like Sunday.
Right.
So this podcast will come out, I feel like it will be a little late for the hurricane.
Now, we will literally be hunkered down while the tempest is outside throwing cars down the street.
Yeah.
But I figured rather than not have an episode, we would get together before. Because basically what's happening right now is that if you're self-employed, you got nothing going on at the moment because nobody's doing anything.
Right.
So we're just sitting around waiting for this storm to come. And this is serious, although we're probably going to make some jokes. I mean, these are serious storms and people are very greatly affected by it. However, if you've been in Florida any length of time, and I've been in Florida for almost my entire life, it's usually fine by the, you know, like it's going to cause property damage, a few roofs, you know, it's they're not often fatal, although unless there's a lot of flooding like Houston. I mean, Florida, we're used to it. Florida's got the infrastructure to support this. Our building codes are built for these, you know, made sure our buildings are built for high winds and stuff. It sounds to our northern neighbors, to our people in other states, and my family that are out of state, they're always, everybody's messaging to find out if we're getting out alive, kind of a thing.
I will say this, though, and again, this is weird because by the time you hear this, this would have already happened, and it may not even happen the way that we think it's going to happen at this point. But if it happens the way the track is right now, Miami is kind of screwed.
Yes, it is. But Miami has been hit by many hurricanes over the years.
Yeah, but Andrew was pretty bad.
When I was a kid, that Hurricane Andrew, and I was probably 9 or 10 when Hurricane Andrew hit South Florida, and the town of Homestead was basically leveled. Andrew was a Category 4, I think. It was a very compact storm. It was a real, like, yeah, and it really did a lot. In fact, I had some people that moved up to where I lived in Florida because they lost their homes, and they're like, we're just not going to stick around for the rebuilding. We're just going to get out, and they, like, you know, moved up to my area. It's no joke. Bad things definitely happen, but there are some funny things that happen. For example, every single store whether from a convenience store to Costco to the Home Depot are completely out of bottled water. Every bottle of water has been purchased, to the point where I was at Publix, our favorite grocery store, the other day, and I was in there just getting some snacks and make sure we had lots of dry goods and food to eat in case the power goes out. And I go into the aisle where the bottle of water would normally be, and there's nothing except for Icelandic Glacier, which is a kind of an expensive bottled water brand. It's got the really fancy molded bottle to make it look like ice and stuff. Right. And they were selling pallets of 12 of these for $24. And so, like, you had $24 pallets or little, not even like 12 bottles of water for $24. And I walked right by that over to the Gatorade, which no one has touched the Gatorade. And they had 2-for-1, 9 packs of Gatorade. So I just threw a bunch of those in my cart. And I'm like, I'll drink these and then fill them up with water from
that's
my
what
tap.
That's what I don't understand about the run on water. Do people not realize that water comes out of the tap? I mean, you don't have to buy a bunch of bottled water. You can go buy yourself one of those big, flexible 5-gallon water things and fill it up. You can fill up jugs you have in your house. You can literally buy 2-liter bottles of Diet Coke, pour it out, and fill it with water from the tap. And it's like with the Gatorade, probably cheaper than buying bottled water. And I think it's a great idea. I've never seen this anywhere, and it seems like it's just such a great idea. You know, they always say you should have a hurricane kit, right? Do you have a hurricane kit?
We have stuff that, you know, flashlights and batteries. Yeah. I don't have like a go bag with my hurricane survival supplies.
But here's a great idea. Go to Home Depot after the hurricane. Buy one of those big orange Gatorade water, you know, like the ones they dump on the coach's head at the end of the game.
The Igloo coolers.
Buy that. When you have a hurricane coming, fill it with water. That's all your water you supply right there. When the hurricane's over, you dump it out, you dry it out, and you put all your hurricane crap in it, and you put it in the garage.
That's pretty cool.
That's your hurricane kit, and it's your water. So now you don't have to worry about the whole runs on water, which, by the way, I've been to Publix twice in the last 2 days, and both times they had water, not on the shelves. They're now bringing it out of the back and just distributing it to you and limiting what you can get. But
yeah, people go crazy buying gas. They hoard gas. People are bringing people make this panic so much worse than it has to be. It's like give your cars a full tank of gas, and then you see people pull up to gas stations with like 5 5-gallon gas cans, and they fill them all up, and then they drive off with them like the zombie apocalypse is happening.
If you've got a generator, though, you need gas for the generator, and if you're going to have no electricity for 7 days, how much gas does it take to run a generator for 7 days?
Because here's what you do. All the money that you spend on your generator and on your gas, this is what Gary and the Hughes clan are doing. Because bear in mind, I've got a pregnant wife, a 2-year-old, and an 89-year-old, Julie's grandfather, who live with us. So we've got like this household of people. And I am not going to be trapped in a house with these people with no air conditioning and no water and no power and no Netflix. So we button up the house, get all the stuff in from out of the yard, bring everything in, cover up the windows, do whatever you do. And last week we booked a couple of hotel rooms down at Disney World. So I found at the they call them their value resorts, like the lesser expensive ones. And we booked a couple of hotel rooms next door to each other. Boom. So we got kind of like a mini ghetto hotel suite. Because you know what Disney's going to have before anybody else? They're going to have power. They're going to have water. They're going to have ice. They have their own dedicated power station. They've got generators. They've got people on staff to make sure that we're good to go. And they're hurricane rated. Totally fine. So we're going on Saturday, which is in the past now when this episode comes out. But we're just going to go hang out at Disney for a couple of days in one of the hurricane-rated resorts for like $90 a night. Because I'm from Florida, and that's what you do. Which way is the hurricane coming from? Find a lot of the resort hotels in the Orlando area are rated, and some of them are even designated hurricane shelters. Including, in fact, the Florida Hotel, which is where RIP we had to this year. We just got the notice the day before yesterday that the Florida Professional Photographers canceled the Focus Convention for out of the concern for safety of the members, everybody coming to Orlando, because funny enough, Hurricane Irma is coming the exact same weekend as Focus, which really sucks.
Yeah. I was really upset about that. I really was looking forward to the convention this year.
Yeah, me too.
I thought that they did a great job with great speakers. We've talked about it extensively, and my heart goes out for all the people who's put all the work into these conventions, and now they won't get to see their work come to fruition.
Yeah, that really sucks because the marketing and everything, they were doing a really good job. And incidentally, their competition is the people who entered images in the image competition are still going to get their images judged by a qualified panel of judges. They're going to reconvene next month. So they had more entries into their competition than they have in like 10 years, which is really cool.
I do need to say, though, because I'm in a two-story house, and we will be here writing it out. I've got 6 family members who are in Pinellas County. Pinellas County is the peninsula county that makes Tampa Bay. And if they have to evacuate, they have to have some place to go. So they'll come here. I'm in a non-evacuation area. But if the house is destroyed and I am dead, I do need you to come and delete my browser history.
I got you, buddy. No problem. I've already got it. Let's do a little log me in, and I can actually even do it remotely.
There you go. Well,
just make sure you're plugged into a good battery backup.
You'll have
system.
To dig through the wreckage of the house to find the computer. You won't be able to just log in remotely.
Oh my gosh! I'm gonna have to pull your pantsless dead body off of your computer in order.
The cops will be stopping you. You'll be trying to get to the house, and you'll be screaming, "But I've got to delete the browser history."
I got you, boo. I got you.
All right, that's good to know. Yeah. So hopefully by the time this comes out, everybody is fine. Hopefully we'll be able to follow this up with one relatively quickly that gives everybody an update. I would love that if come, you know, Wednesday.
Hey, yeah, we'll have nothing to do for the next week. I had two big jobs next week. I've got a funny story once I finish this, but I got 2 jobs next week that was about $8,500, maybe $9,000 worth of work for the next week that got rescheduled and one job potentially canceled, because one was a conference with headshots and event coverage, and then the other was 100 headshots for a company here in town. And so that's, I mean, that's a good amount of, I mean, that's a good week. And now that's all, like, we got to follow up, assuming that the city's still here after the thing moves through, but we got to follow up and reschedule and hope, because that's a lot of money to lose in a week. So that really stinks, but we're going to follow up, and both of them look like they'll reschedule. But that was my week next week, but now I got nothing to do, so we might as well record a bonus episode of the podcast, right?
I have a wedding next Saturday, which hopefully will go off fine and dandy. It's 6 days after the hurricane makes landfall up here around us, so hopefully by then everything will be back to normal. It's not a beach wedding, so hopefully everything will be fine, and
wasn't this beach a little closer before?
You're having a beach wedding, and it's being moved to my backyard.
Yes, yes. And gosh, I felt like it took longer to get to the beach until I guess. All right, okay, here it is now. I guess this is the new beach.
Hey, I want to ask your opinion on, we do want to talk a little bit about photography, because we have to keep in mind that 99.9% of our audience is not sitting in the middle of a hurricane.
Right.
So I wanted to ask you a question about competition, because this was supposed to be a competition weekend and judging, and you're a judge.
Yes.
And one of the things I notice, and I wonder about it, I was doing a picture of my daughters and their friends are here, you know, as I said, camping with us, and I took a picture of them.
I saw that when you posted
it. Right, and a lot of people are laughing about it and joking about it because they all have really sour faces on them. But if you look at the retouch on that picture, you can tell that the faces are definitely lighter than everything else. And you know, they always say you want the brightest thing on your picture, the thing that draws the eye, to be the thing you want people to look at, which is the faces. And I particularly was looking at Pete Rizak, our buddy Pete, who was supposed to be speaking this weekend and does these wonderful coffee tinted black and white character portraits of kids in antique and classic sports gear. It's fantastic. And I was specifically looking at his work and trying to mimic it a little bit, because I really like that style. And I'm noticing in his work and in other people's work and in the picture that I put up, I did it the same way. And I think this is directly as a result of competition. I'm noticing that a lot of portrait work is getting to the point now to where it's almost looking like there's a spotlight on everyone's face.
Yeah.
Because we are turning down the brightness everywhere else but the face. We may even be brightening the face a little bit in Photoshop, but we're definitely turning down anything else, because it is so hammered into us that if there is anything that's a little bit white, anything that's a little bit bright and catches your eye, you need to bring it down. And I just wonder about that. I wonder if it's being done a little too much.
Yeah, I think there's a misconception about it's not always the brightest thing in the image that draws your eye. There's a hierarchy of things that will typically draw your eye. And the thing that draws your eye the most in any image is going to be the area of highest contrast. Most of the time, in most medium images, low-key images, that's going to be the brightest thing. But it's not necessarily the truth. If you've got a field, a white field covered in snow, and you've got a tiny little person in a bright red, you know, cloak in the middle of it, you're going to go right to the red cloak.
The,
you know?
The darkest thing next to the lightest thing is where the eye is drawn. But I just wonder, if you go back and look at a lot of the images that were nominated for GIAs and that sort of stuff, you're really starting to see images where, if you were to try and say, if someone showed you the image and said this is an image that was lit and not photoshopped, then you would, and you were supposed to pick apart how it was shot, you would say, okay, well, it was shot with a big parabolic to light the whole scene for Phil, and then they had individual spotlights on everybody's face, because that's the way you're seeing a lot of images now. Because of everyone with the vignetting and bringing it down, and I'm not criticizing it, but I do think it is a shift that we're seeing in portrait photography more and more towards having that heavy contrast between the face and the rest of the body.
It's funny. I think when I think about that style of work, I always think about George Harrell, and I think that he made that the most famous. You know, if you can find books on George Harrell's Hollywood portraits, probably being his most famous work, but this is a photographer.
Yeah. He literally would put spotlights on people's faces, right?
But at the same time, he's also one of the greatest Photoshoppers. He's one of the greatest post-production artists of all time. He used to edit on the negatives and used to burn and dodge extensively to make the one part that he wanted to. If you just do a Google image search for George Harrell, that's H-U-R-R-E-L-L, you can see that style of work. And this guy was making work all the way back many, many years. He's photographed all the famous film stars, you know, Clark Gable and Humphrey Bogart and Cagney and, you know, all the way up to young Harrison Ford. So this guy worked a long, long time, and some of the Rita Hayworth and all, pretty much every single famous, you know, movie star that you can think of. In fact, I would say he's probably more like, he probably inspired glamour shots, to be honest with you. But his work is so incredible. But he was so prolific in The Burning and Dodging that I would say that if he didn't create the style, he certainly popularized it.
I think though that now when you look at work, especially competition work, I think that one of the things that immediately takes an image from a photograph into the realm of artistic photograph is that level of burn and dodge and face pop, where maybe not an ordinary person, but a photographer looks at it. Like that picture I put up of the four girls, when I look at that, all I see is the post-processing. Because right. It just stands out to me that their faces have definitely been brought up in post-processing and their bodies have been brought down. You know, that absolutely is obvious to me. And I don't know, you know, to the common man, do they see a picture like that and just think, nice picture? Or do they also think, oh, it's kind of artistically done?
No, I think the common man would look at it, common man or woman would look at it and immediately put a pea yellow Instagram filter on it and then post
it. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, you can recognize it in a heartbeat if you're a photographer. In a heartbeat, you'll see it and go, oh, that's an image that's been worked over. And to me, that's the first thing that makes an image look like it's less of a street photograph that you see from the 60s and more of a artistic piece that, you know, because everything's been brought down except the faces.
Well, having done some judging, I will tell you the thing that really, really makes images score higher in this context is when it's had work done to it, but you can't see where. When you can't see the seams or the edges, when you know in your mind by looking at the image that this was more than likely achieved with post-processing, but you can't pinpoint exactly where that's happened, and you can't say for sure. And so it's when a photographer or artist does something and you can't tell how they did it, or where those edges are, I think that makes it more impressive. And so I think the better you get at post-processing, the better you get at making it look like there hasn't been any.
I agree, but I think we're seeing less of it. I think we're seeing it becoming a more accepted trend that the faces are obviously not lit by the same light.
Yeah. Well, I think that's overwhelmingly, you know, there are so many people using digital manipulation and retouching when they create work that kind of, we'll call it the photoshopped look, it has become acceptable, but it's still not acceptable in, you know, professional commercial portraiture. Like if you turn in a photo like that that was obviously photoshopped and into a magazine like Vanity Fair or GQ or something like that, you'd get it rejected immediately. I agree.
You don't see as much contrast between the face and everything else in magazines like Vanity Fair and stuff as you do in competition.
I think it's our world, the portrait and wedding world, the association world, the world of competition. And I think that, to be honest, I think that it's gone too far. I think that it's too nitpicky when someone looks at an image and says, like, oh, if you've got a photograph, let's say I've got a model that and client that I've shot with a bunch and I've used her in competition. I've merited like four images with her. Usually every time she comes in for a session, I'll merit an image with her. And I got a critique back from my IPC entry, and it scored an 82, so it merited. But the critique was that her hands were brighter than her face, but it was the insides of her hands, and she's dark-skinned African-American, you know, from the Caribbean island. I was like, her hands are brighter
than her face.
They are brighter than
her face.
Like, in actual real life, her hands are brighter than her face. So there are some of these things where I think that you know, the digital technology and the ability to create, I think some of it's just putting the cart before the horse. It's like, you really got to use some common sense here and say that my personal style is I want it to look normal. I want it to look like it pops, like it's had some work done, but I don't want anybody to be able to go in and see what I've done. And I think that goes for my competition image as that goes for the work I do for my clients, which are essentially the same thing. And I think that because of all the bad manipulation that's happening out there, it actually makes somebody who does a good job, it's easier to stand out when you do a good job.
Let's talk about what it's like to be nominated for a GEO Award.
Well, first of all, thank you. I was and am not nominated. There's no nomination process.
Oh, okay. I mean, it'd be helpful if I knew how this process worked.
You're basically, I think, from what I understand, and I wasn't in the GEO selection or anything like that, but I think essentially it's the top 10 scoring images in each category. So right. I have one of my images from the IPC. Was a wedding image from an actual wedding of an actual couple on an actual job that I was paid to be at, scored a 92 in the wedding category, and that was my highest scoring image ever, so I was really stoked about that. I'm usually like low 80s, you know. They released yesterday the names of the top 10 in each category, and so these are the images that are in consideration for the Grand Imaging Award. So basically, there's 10 categories and 10 images in each category. And so it's the top 10 scoring images. And so from what I understand is sometimes you can have 15 images that are the top 10 scoring images because maybe two images scored 92s and three images right. scored, you know, 89s or whatever it is. So the judges go in and all the judges do is break the ties and organize them into the top 10. So it's automatic by score which ones are in the top 10, and then the judges pick which one is the first, second, and third place out of those 10, and that's not based on score. So they break the ties, and then they pick the pick the winners that way. But anyway, I'm really super excited to be – it's my first time. Not nominated, but qualified, I guess, for a GEO. So that's pretty cool. So it's possible, although not likely if you look at the other images that are in there. It's like it could go either way, but that is pretty cool. Incidentally,
I'm not going to say it. Go ahead.
Say it. Do it. It's our show. Say what you're going to say. Don't hold back.
They are all incredible images, but there is one image that we like to make this joke, but I do believe that there is one image that sets the record for the smallest bride in a picture I have ever seen. In terms of it's a wedding category picture, and the bride, if you measured it out, can't be more than 2% of the entire frame, maybe 1% of the entire frame.
Mine's pretty small in the image.
Yours is pretty small. Yours is huge compared to the one with the waterfall. You know the one I'm talking about. It's a beautiful landscape picture. I have a whole canyon rim and this waterfall in the middle, and the bride is in front of the waterfall, down at the bottom, little bitty, tiny little bride, like an ant's life little bride. Could be a bride, could just be a girl in a white dress. Incredible image and beautiful, but for years we always have joked that the key to getting images to score well in competition, the wedding competition, is to make your bride as small as possible in the image so that it's mostly about the landscape, and this is maybe the record.
That was a joke years ago in like the WPPI and the Australian the AIPP competitions, was that if you want to, you know, all the winning wedding images, go out and take a really phenomenal landscape and then just stick a tiny bride in it. And then
I would like to enter a picture, a physical print of a beautiful landscape, and then on the corner of the print have an actual loop that is taped to the print, and then the judges would go up and look in the loop in order to see my bride, who is down at, who you could not see with the naked eye. But if you look through this loop, here's my bride down in the corner. And I swear to God, I want to do it so bad. I want to enter that in a competition, and they have to go up and look at the bride.
You should do it.
Just to make the point.
No, you should, instead of having a bride there, you should just have tiny little letters that say, remember to put bride here.
Yes. Yeah. Like you entered the wrong one before you stuck the bride on it. Here's my little, don't forget to put a bride here.
So I had an interesting occurrence this week, this past week. From time to time, Creative Live will, they spend a lot of money on ads for their classes. And so I think a lot of people have seen ads. They'll pop up in their Facebook feed and Instagram or whatever for Creative Live classes. And I happened to see an ad pop in for my class that I did like 3.5 years ago, the business of professional headshots. And so they cut together this really cool little promo that's probably about 15 seconds long. And then, you know, even though they're an ad, they're in your feed and you can comment on them. And right away in the feed, there were three comments that were like made fun of the ad and the background that was in the ad.
The 70s background.
Yeah.
Yes, the 70s
And it was
background.
Like this blue muslin pop-up background, and it was, you know, it's not a, it's hard to kind of tell what it is from the ad, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely more old school, but it, you'd be surprised by how much I actually get asked to use it. When you provide your client with, you know, here are the 10 background options you can have for your headshot job, how many times that one gets picked blows my mind. But in fact, I paid $125 for that background, and I was thinking about going back, like if I really was obsessing too much about this, and going back through my QuickBooks and calculating how much money I've made with that background.
Oh, you should.
over the last 10 years.
And then comment on there, you know, $65,000 I've made with that $100 backdrop, so suck it.
Yeah, well, the other thing was, and that is fine, and I said, and one guy commented something like, I guess he forgot his, fake brick background or whatever.
You know,
and so that's like
me and the signs, Gary. You know, like, you know, because I shoot all these beach weddings, and I only have 15 minutes, and I want to get as many pictures as I can, and people love signs. So how many times have you seen my picture of the bride and groom with the Mr. and the Mrs. signs?
Yeah, and the big ampersand.
And the big
stuff.
Ampersand and all that. And I know that people who follow me at all have got to be like, oh, my God, the Mr. and Mrs. signs again. Hey, to the people who are having their picture done, it's new.
Right.
I know we've seen it a million times.
Or it's not,
it's
and
new.
They want it for themselves. That's what they want. They saw it.
Yeah.
They want it.
They saw that on my website, and they want it for themselves. And you can't deny them that. You can't be like, well, because I'm sick of looking at these signs, I'm going to give you something else. When they're like, no, we came to you because we like those signs.
Yeah. Well, the point of that, what I'm getting at is the one comment, the other ones were fine, because I kind of respond to them in a funny way, because it just happened to pop up in my feed, and it's an ad, so it's gone. I couldn't even find it now if I wanted to. And so the guy said something about the rubber brick background, and I said, actually, my baggage was overweight, so I had to leave that one at home.
Yeah, the rubber brick background.
But then one guy started commenting about how, like, he probably doesn't actually work, and that
you don't work,
right?
And that photographers who
teach are teaching because they don't have business, they don't have clients.
Wow.
And so, and although I've had these thoughts,
not an invalid assumption in many cases.
However,
just wrong here.
My response is that the photographers that have the many, many photographers I've learned from over the years, thank goodness, and the ones that I know have had great businesses and most still do, the ones that don't are probably retired. Thank goodness that they loved to teach and took the time out to teach what they know, or else me and thousands of other photographers wouldn't know what the heck we're doing or how to make money, because I didn't invent most of the stuff that I use. It's a big old mess of all these different ideas from different teachers I've had over the years and some direct mentoring. And thank goodness these people actually wanted to spend some time passing on their knowledge, because otherwise many of us wouldn't have successful businesses. But my point was it's really interesting to consider that that's the mentality of people, is that if you're teaching, then you probably they're going to assume that you don't have enough business, which is funny to say that about Creative Live, because as far as making money and being able to teach, Creative Live has the only platform that really in and of itself pays instructors enough money to make it worth taking time out of your busy business.
Yeah, Creative Live is not the place to make that point, because you make money. You make money on Creative Live, more money than you would make doing a photo shoot that day.
Right. If you go teach at Imaging USA or WPPI or Photo Plus, if you've got a sponsor, you're usually there for 3 or 4 days, and you usually probably get paid with travel and everything somewhere to the tune of $2,000 or $3,000 is what you get paid to be somewhere, and you're usually there for 3 to 5 days, you know, which isn't a terrific amount of money. Like, it's not as much money as you'd make if you stayed home doing photo shoots in your own business. It's not as much money. It's enough money to make it worth going.
It is. Well, it's not as much money if you stayed home and it was a good week. But is there a photographer on the planet who consistently makes $5,000 every single week? That's not the way
plenty.
It usually works.
Yeah, I think so. It really depends on your business, on your overhead. But like next week, had to postpone $9,000 in work because of the stupid hurricane. Like, and that's not every week for us, but that's not abnormal.
Right.
You know what I mean? And there are photographers out there that do $3,000 or $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 portrait sales on the regular. And so, you know, to take a week out of your life and go and do something. Now, Creative Live is like, you go there, you're there for 2 or 3 days, and then they pay you a percentage of whatever they sell of your class, and they send you a check every 3 months forever. So, right. So that's like they send you your cut every 3 months in a check. You get it in the mail, and it's a nice little – here's the thing, though. It's actually worth taking the time out of your business to go and do it. So they're like the one entity where you could actually have a busy studio, and the financial reimbursement would be worth taking a break from your own business to go and do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so that's – yeah, Creative Live is not a good place to point to in terms of saying, oh, those people obviously can't work. No, Creative Live pays well. You know, there's other areas. When people start to make that assumption, the time that I give a little credence to that assumption is when it's a photographer who's a big teaching photographer, teaching, especially if they're teaching business success, and they were only successful in their own business for a year.
Oh yeah, plenty of those.
Or maybe two before they started teaching it, and now their main business is teaching business success.
Absolutely.
I'm like, I personally would like to see you have been – I want to see a guy teaching business success who's in his 50s and had a studio for 15 years.
You better have no hair or all gray hair.
Yeah. That's when – because it's the other ones who are like, you know, I was doing this and I was doing that. And I'm like, okay, you did it for a year, but could you have sustained that for 3 years? Because you're teaching people that this is how they're going to support their family for 20 years.
Right.
And you didn't support your family doing it for 20 years.
No, you had two or three great years, and then you decided, hey, I'm going to become a guru, right?
Right, exactly. Those people I'm a little wary of.
Right. And I took a little bit of offense at first, but then I thought, you know, to this comment, I'm like, you know what? That's how I feel a lot about instructors sometimes, too. But, you know, I think that it's important to also recognize is you can find out very easily how busy a photographer is on social media, very, very easily. Like, what you can see what work they're posting. You can
see
what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. You can go on most photographers with jobs every day. Like, if they don't have information coming on all their social media channels and fresh work and new stuff all the time, like, you can pretty much guess that they're probably not taking a lot of shoots.
Yeah, see, that's my thing. When you start seeing the people who are teaching business success, and you don't ever see them posting any client work.
Right.
That's when I started to go,
That's when their Instagram feed becomes a bunch of stupid inspirational quotes.
Oh.
Like when people quote themselves. It's like,
did you just post
a quote from yourself? Like, it's not a quote if it's from you. It's just you saying
stuff. It's just
you
saying it, yes. I like to quote myself here when I say. So here's the other thing that I forgot what I was going to say. Not important.
Yeah. So I want to start a series of inspirational quotes from you and I.
Okay.
And then we'll start that regularly.
I remember what I was going to say. This is why whenever I teach, I never teach business.
Right.
Because I feel if you teach business, you're really putting yourself on the hook. Because I can guarantee you that I can teach you how to take a good picture, and you will get value for that. You will get your money's worth. But I can't always guarantee you that I can teach you how to make money as a photographer. I wish I could, but you know, but I can't. And as a result, I'm very leery of saying to someone, "Come and I will teach you how to be make a successful businessman as a photographer." That scares me much more than "Come and I will teach you how to use off-camera flash."
Right.
Off-camera flash is a given. That works no matter if it's a recession going on or no matter where you live or anything else. Off-camera flash works the same.
Right. Absolutely. You know? But so, I think that when you approach something when you're teaching business, I see this all the time with photographers in groups on Facebook and on other social media platforms and at conferences. And they're all – and when somebody says this is the way that you should do it, then you get up, close your notebook, and walk out.
Right.
Because when you teach – and I teach business and marketing quite a lot. And it's important to say, these are my ideas. This is what's working right now. And business and marketing is something that's constantly changing. Tomorrow, it's very possible that over the next year, you know, Facebook gets taken down by Anonymous, and then it's, you know, everybody stops using it. And then now you got to use something else. And that's a lot of revenue for a lot of people. So that's changed business. Or a new platform comes out, like Instagram came out, and that's a new platform, that's a new thing, or Snapchat that we have to learn how to use. Or people start using Medium instead of WordPress or whatever. Like, there are constantly changing, and you have to present your ideas, and this is a possibility. There are many different business models, and this is what's working for me right now. And if you see me in 6 months, this could be completely different, because business changes all the time, because our consumers change, the market changes, the economy changes, everything, the technology changes, all this stuff changes. But there are certain things that make sense, like here's how pricing should be structured mathematically. But for the most part, business and marketing techniques have to change. Like, do you do direct mail?
I don't, no.
No, that does anybody?
So not anymore, but they used to.
You know, my the only place that really does direct mail is every time a new pizza joint opens up near my studio, I get a bunch of stuff crammed in my mailbox, and that's probably about it.
Here's what I find fascinating. I like Twitter more than I do anything else.
Twitter is my favorite, but I use it the least. Because
exactly. Yeah. Everyone I know, no one uses Twitter. By the way, it's @Bure_. Follow me on Twitter. No one uses Twitter, and yet everything important seems to happen on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's really weird. It's always the president tweeted this, or this person tweeted that, or this big announcement came out on Twitter. It's never Facebook. It's always Twitter, and yet no one I know uses Twitter.
Right. Well, celebrities use Twitter. Seems to me like it's the perfect platform for public figures and politicians and celebrities. You know, it's like you don't hear like President Trump Snapchatted his. No, I mean it's always
or
Twitter,
Facebook.
Right?
Sears announced on Facebook today they'll be closing 100 stores. It's always on Twitter.
And what happens when you're watching BBC World Service and a report comes up right at the bottom next to that reporter's
hashtag
name is always their Twitter handle.
Their Twitter handle, right. Not their Facebook page, right? And it's always hashtagged and everything. So I think it's fascinating that there seems to be this whole world of intense Twitter use except for every person I know. I don't know a single person.
Well, you don't know public figures and celebrities.
Yeah, but people are following the celebrities. So I would assume those would be people I would know, which means they would be checking Twitter, which means they would be following me and tweeting. But no, they're really not. They're really not. And I like Twitter because on your phone, it's just so much easier to scroll through all the stuff. Then Facebook is just too busy, and there's just too much crap going on. With Twitter, it's just easy to scroll right through, and the hashtags are convenient. And I spent yesterday, all I did all day was tweet jokes about the hurricane. That's basically what I did. Tweet jokes about the hurricane, hashtag them with the hurricane, and then see if they got retweeted. And they did. I got the most retweets I've ever gotten by hashtagging hurricane jokes.
All right, let's hear some of your hurricane jokes.
Oh, there were just hurricane tweets like the hurricane's not due for 3 days, but I'm going to start drinking now just to be safe. Hashtag hurricane humor. Or why do I feel like the entire state of Florida is about to be cast in an episode of Naked and Afraid? You know, people like, you know, just little jokes like that. But that gets tons of retweets.
Yeah, here's one of my favorites of yours. First, they order a mandatory evacuation. Then you experience a mandatory evacuation.
Yes, I wasn't sure if people would really get what I was saying there, but I am particularly proud of that little bit of wordplay. First, they order a mandatory evacuation, and then you experience a mandatory evacuation.
Yeah, yeah. I think your Twitter feed is good. I do enjoy it. In fact, the people I follow on Twitter, I follow a lot of comedians.
Twitter. That's me. It's all I do is follow funny people.
Twitter is a really fantastic way, especially for comedians, to be able to test out material.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I think that that's a pretty cool platform. But it is funny. I don't see it for a photography business. I don't see a lot of photographers having success with it. I don't.
No. Well, I don't use mine for my photography business at all. My Twitter feed is nothing. It's pure me, and there's no photography in it at all. It's nothing but me making jokes. That's all it is. And that's what I want Twitter to be. I don't want it to be, we have Facebook and we have Instagram and we have Pinterest where we have to put pictures of all of our work. And we have all of that for that. Can I just have one place where I can just be a person and have fun and not have to be the photographer, Bure? That's what Twitter is for me.
Yeah. Well, I kind of use it as the PG-13 version. Like, I don't post photography-related stuff on there very much. It's at Gary Hughes, by the way, which I was one of the first 10,000 users on Twitter.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can go. My Twitter has been there a long time, and I actually got my actual name. When Twitter came out, I was watching – I listened to podcasts even back then. And there was one podcast, at least it was a tech podcast, and they're like, yeah, so Twitter this, and I'm on Twitter now and doing Twitter this. And then I read a story about an American college student who was arrested in Egypt and had friends who followed him on Twitter, and he tweeted, I'm being arrested in here and such, somebody helped. And so his family members were able to, even though he had no cell phone service and only Wi-Fi or whatever, he was able to get, you know, bailed out and rescued and from a stinky Egyptian prison thanks to Twitter. So I signed up there, and then I was trying to tell my friends about it, and they're like, who would do that? That's stupid. That sounds really dumb.
Right.
And now, of course, Twitter is what Twitter is. So I'm just saying that I was I'm a trendsetter, a bit of a trendsetter.
Well, I think more of a super nerd.
Yeah, okay, that's probably more obvious.
Yeah,
speaking of social media platforms that no one cares about or uses, over to our Facebook page. this week we posted some really interesting stories and a sad story about an officer shooting a newspaper photographer in Ohio after confusing his tripod and camera for a gun. Now, read the story, draw your own conclusions, but I have a couple of comments on the story because I asked when I posted, has anyone ever thought about this while lugging your gear around? Because I did a job yesterday. I went down to a high-rise building in downtown Orlando, and they all have security desks and security protocols when you come in. And I'm dragging just a big black nondescript Pelican case and another long light stand case and both rolling those things through. And I always wonder, nobody's ever stopped me or tried to look in them, but like, how am I perceived when I'm bringing my gear around to these jobs and to these secure buildings? And so I asked, has anyone ever thought about this while lugging your gear around? And then we got two responses that I want to read. Randy Harris wrote, yes, unfortunately, I have a fear of carrying my tripod and even my camera in my hands. It's so front and center on my mind, I've started writing a book/movie based on the idea.
Okay.
Yep. All right. I'll be interested to congratulate you when it wins at Cannes Film Festival. That'd be great.
Palme d'Or.
Cliff Self writes, photo vest goes a long way if you're working photojournalism. Smart actions like not being in the dark, pointing something at the police while they're on a stop, while you don't really know what the situation is, being aware of the moment, you become the officer's center of attention, and being sure he knows what's in your hands. Bright colors, maybe not blue or red, depending on your local. We don't know the details of locale. We don't know the details of the incident, so it's tough to say who or what caused it, but when you're out photographing folks with guns who are actively engaged in their job, it's a good idea to use caution. Horrible thing to happen, and the lives of more than two people will never be the same. Thoughts are with both, and I hope we someday see the details of what happened so we may learn from it. I want to comment on sort of the first sentence in Cliff's response. A photography vest, like, at a distance, depending on, do you think it could look like a tactical vest?
Yeah.
Like, it could make you look more like you're carrying weapons?
Maybe.
Is that possible?
Yeah. Here's the thing. I've seen the body cam from the police officer. Have you seen the body cam?
No, huh?
It's tragic because he shoots the guy and then runs over calling for medics. He knows the guy.
He knew the guy?
Yeah, the guy's a reporter, a photographer for a local paper. He knows him. His name is Andy. And the and the guy, and Andy, who got shot, knows the cop. When he comes running up on him, you're hearing him talk. You don't see much. It's dark. But you're talking, and he's like, oh, man, I'm so sorry. You know, and he's saying, Andy, I'm so sorry. I thought it was a rifle. And he's like, oh, you know, and they're talking to each other. He's like, he tells you, guys, I love you, man. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And God bless him. The photographer, even then, is saying, I don't want you to lose your job over this.
Wow.
Yeah, they know each other. They know each other. This was, you know, this was just a, you know, he, for some reason, he thought it was a rifle. I think the bigger issue here is not, oh, cop shoots photographer. The bigger issue is the heightened fear we have in the country right now that a police officer on a traffic accident stop would for some reason think someone was stopping and pulling a rifle out of their car. The fact that he would think that, that would so be much in the forefront of his mind that he would feel the need to pull a pistol and shoot that guy at range. That to me is the bigger issue because they knew each other, you know, by name, by first name. They were on a first name basis, these two guys.
That'll make the community picnic a little awkward.
Yes.
Some of that, you know, that's like, so the old,
the photographer is fine, by the way. He was grazed once and caught in the side, I think, with the second shot.
Golly, can you imagine? Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, wow, that was, wow. Pulling your tripod out, it looks like a rifle. But the fact that you would think Somebody's pulling a rifle out at my traffic stop.
That says something about our state of mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly, right? Because that's just something I would think most cops really aren't really thinking about very often. And I don't know why. I don't know the area. I don't know the crime in the area. I don't know anything about it. But that to me was what struck me as, wow, a rifle at a traffic stop? You know, or an accident?
Or like you're stopping a car in a normal traffic stop, and then down the street a ways, somebody's just walking up to you. Although there have been, you know, shootings of police. I remember a couple years ago, police just sitting in their car, just getting shot, you know. And it's just a crazy, crazy time we live in. So tell all you photographers out there doing street photography, you know, take care of yourself and make sure you're in the daylight, you know.
I've always felt I couldn't be a police officer just simply because every time I had to pull someone over on a traffic violation, I would be scared to death walking up to the car.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even though the number of police officers shot in traffic stops is minimal,
right.
Still, I would be having a lot of manual evacuations.
Yeah.
mandatory evacuations.
Well, we definitely sympathize and glad that that guy's okay, man. What a terrible situation. But
and glad that they know each other and that it really was an honest mistake.
And and thanks you guys for Randy and Cliff for those great comments. What else you got, Boo Boo?
I think that's about it. We probably need to wrap this thing up. We're going to run long once again on the special hurricane edition. I do want to say this. You mentioned going in with your Pelican case. You know, I have my big Pelican case, which holds all my gear, and I have the smaller Pelican case. And during the hurricane, I'm going to be taking all my backup drives, putting them in the small Pelican case and locking it up. Because that is one thing about those Pelican cases. They are damn near indestructible.
Yep, that's true.
I mean, so delete my browser history. And then find my Pelican case. Those are the two things you need to do after my home has been destroyed.
I got it. No problem. Yeah, we started this past year just syncing all of our active client files are synced with the cloud. So we have everything is already backed up somewhere far away. So and I have pretty good confidence in that. We'll see. But luckily, I don't have any really weddings or anything there I need to back up because those are all, mostly my work is replaceable. So, I'm not too
worried about it. Well, I look to back up a lot of stuff, too, because even the people who I've already delivered their images to, if they're locals, I got to worry that, you know, maybe afterwards I'm getting a call from somebody saying we lost our picture, our wedding pictures in the hurricane. Do you still have them?
Yeah, so, we actually have a policy for any portrait or wedding client that we've ever shot. If you lose your prints and finished products in any kind of fire or natural disaster, we will replace them.
All right.
Yeah, and that's kind of a cool guarantee to have. And we've only ever had to do that once, and in which case they filed an insurance claim, and the client even covered the cost, the physical cost of reprinting all the stuff. But
Do you ever feel concerned about, because this is a concern I have, is like, let's say it's an album, and something like that happens, and they come back to you and you say, I tell you what, I'll just reprint it for cost. Great. Now, they're going to find out what your cost is.
Not really. I mean, I think if they understand your pricing, I think they'll just be grateful to get it back. I don't think they'll come back to you and go, now I know what your cost is. And you go, no, you don't.
I think there'd be a little bit of that. I mean, because albums are expensive.
Right, but you know what
and they're expensive to print. Don't get me wrong. The physical cost is expensive, too. But I think most people would be a little shocked to discover that it's not as expensive. I think people – and don't even talk about prints. Okay, right. I'll print it back for you for cost. It's going to cost me a quarter.
Yeah. Well, you know the cost of what that book physically costs to print, but that's not what it costs you to make it.
I know that too, but I don't want to have to make that explanation.
You don't have to. I think that somebody who's lost something like that in a disaster will be so grateful just to be able to get their stuff back, and that they can count on a good professional photographer having stuff backed up. I think in fact, I remember they came back and they ended up hiring us for their daughter's wedding, who we did our high school senior portraits. And then we did family portraits for them also another time that we replaced all of that stuff. And then I think 6 months later, their daughter got engaged and they hired us to shoot her wedding. And they didn't give us any pushback on any of the price of anything. They just loved us because we were able to replace all their stuff for them.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I would absolutely do it. I would certainly do it for them at cost, but I would not like having to tell them what my cost is.
Right, which is why, the cost is low enough and I got enough money off of the sale initially. Whereas, I wouldn't have any problem just replacing it.
Right. Okay, we got to wrap this thing up.
Yeah.
Got to wrap this thing up. We're going long again.
Why are you talking so much?
I'm not talking so much.
You are.
I am? All right. That's it. All I have coming up that you need to talk about and come see me at is September 29th to October 2nd. I'll be at the Expose Convention, Expose 2017 on Jekyll Island at the Jekyll Island Conference Center. Go to gppa.com to get all the information. What have you got coming up, Gary?
I just want to reiterate that for those of you who entered into the Focus photographic competition for Focus, even though the convention itself was canceled, the images are still going to be judged and awards given and stuff like that. So hang tight for information coming out on that. I do have coming up in January, I will be in London at the SWPP convention, and that's going to be really cool. I'll be doing a class on marketing, a class on the business of headshots, and I'll also be judging at the competition. In February, I will be at the Photo Pro Expo in the Cincinnati area, and that's going to be really cool. I'll be doing a short form marketing class, and then I'll also be doing a half a day, 4 hours on lighting, posing, headshots and all that stuff that I do in my studio. So that'll be really fun. I got some other stuff working for next summer and some other gigs throughout the year, but that's pretty cool. And I also want to reiterate, by the way, that if you go to ppa.com/Harvey Relief, you can still donate to the PPA Charities Harvey Relief Fund, and the Professional Photographers of America is matching those donations up to $100,000, and that will go to help photographers who are going to experience a negative impact on their business because of the flooding and the storm damage from Hurricane Harvey. So keep that in mind. That's ppa.com/Harvey Relief. And if you already went and tried to donate and you had a problem, the link was broken for like a day for some reason, but that's all fixed now, so it's all well and good. ppa.com/Harvey Relief.
You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/photobombpodcast, and I'll put that picture up of the four girls, and you can judge for yourself what I was talking about. And questions and comments can be sent to us, questions@photobombpodcast, or you can text us through Facebook. You'll find me online at BooRayPerry.com. You'll find Gary at HughesFioretti.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for this week, and we will hopefully see you back here again soon.
As long as we're all still alive. See you later.